This is the Fleming Foundation Summer Symposium 2021, Living Well in a Dying Age, with a lecture by Dr. James Patrick entitled Augustine on the Empire.
The emperors that St. Augustine knew during his years in Africa from 389 to 430 were Theodosius I, Arcadius, and Theodosius II. But Augustine abandoned the teaching of rhetoric in Rome to become a Christian at the hands of St. Ambrose in 387. The emperor was Theodosius I the Great, 379 to 395. A Christian by conviction as well as policy, whom Augustine calls faithful and pious. Valentinian, 364 to 75, would be the last Western emperor to lead an army across the Rhine against the Alemanni, the Germans. His son, Gratian, 367 through 83, viewed Christians as a de facto religion of the empire, suppressed the traditional religion of Rome, and removed the Statue of Victory from the Senate House for the last time. Theodosius II could do very little but accept the invasion of his western provinces by the army of the Goths and Vandals that had begun with the crossing of the Rhine on New Year's Eve in 406. In 409, the garrison was withdrawn from Britannia and the western provinces were effectively ceded to the Ostrogoths and other migrant invaders. Then came 410 and the first incursion into sacred Rome since Brennius in 390 BC, 7 centuries earlier. Diocletian had presciently moved the western capital to Milan in 286. And when Milan came under Gothic assault in 402, there was a further move to Ravenna on the Adriatic, which was accessible to the imperial navy without the long journey around the Italian peninsula. It was in Milan that St. Augustine met Ambrose, finally abandoned the Manichees, and was baptized. As the 5th century opened, even after 410, it was possible to see the Roman Empire as the providentially provided government of the world, as indeed Augustine did right up to the end, when the invasion of North Africa by the Vandals made that idea impossible. Being an imperialist in the context of the 5th century meant at least being grateful for the empire, for its authority, for its ability to establish at least intermittently an earthly peace. And if one were so placed, it meant working within the imperial system to achieve common goals, goals common in this case to the church and the empire. The legitimacy of this process, the cooperation between imperial authorities and the church, and its theological complexities were matters of great import, established in some form in Christendom since the day when Jesus asked for the Pharisees where the taxes should be paid to the government, took the coin and asked, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And the answer, of course, was Caesar's. This "render to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's." This can, of course, be taken as a kind of enlightenment declaration of separation of church and state. But this prescription would have been meaningless in the 1st century in Judea, where it was taken to mean that the claim of Caesar to have a certain legitimacy was to be recognized. The tendency to see the empire as the framework within which Christianity would prosper was in place when St. Paul wrote to the Romans in the 40s and 50s, by which time obedience to the Roman authorities was deeply embedded in the understanding of divine providence. Paul wrote, "Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, those who resist the authorities resist what God has appointed. Do what is good and you will receive approval from the authorities, for the authorities are there to approve of what is done that is good and to punish what is evil." Now, of course, this text has caused great difficulty right down to the question in the 1944 about the legitimacy of destroying someone like the Fuhrer. The church has always had a...